I'll give a little bit of background and introduction to Social Archive, the project, and sort of our pitch for social scientists to use this and related systems. And then I'm interested in the library angle as sort of the interface between the archive and the scholars and the public or the people who want to read the work. So I'm really, really happy to be speaking at this event. I'm on an outreach campaign this over the course of this whole year with a little bit of grant money, and librarians are a huge part of the outreach plan. So this was a really, really fortuitous invitation to have. So thank you again. I'll first give a little bit of our pitch to social scientists, and then I'll describe the system a little and put it in and try to put it at the end into the broader context of sort of the publishing ecosystem or scholarly communication. I'm a sociologist, a demographer. I study families and inequality, and I came to this as a person who was frustrated, as many people are, with a lot of how our publishing system works. One of the key, one of the places when you have an opportunity to reach social scientists about things that are wrong with our publishing system is while they're waiting for their work to be reviewed, when it is not being read by the people they'd really like to read it, and it is possibly also not being read by the people they really don't want to be reading it, or the reviewers. Everybody who's in the peer review publishing business reaches this point when the point of maximum friction between what you want to have happening with your work and what actually is happening with your work. You've finished a draft, you know it's not perfect, but you think it's good enough to be published, that's why you sent it out. You really want people to start reading it and engaging with it and learning from it and interacting with you and the public and the media and all the people, all the your hopes and dreams for the work. And at that very moment, screech, nothing happens. And it can that moment can be 3 months, 6 months, 9 months, 18 months. People wait a long time for reviews. Of course, when the reviews come back, you're right back in it. That's sort of number one, is like we can do something about this time element. Number two is the paywall. Not all social scientists, but a lot of social scientists have ambitions to have their work reach beyond other social scientists. Even the public, especially the media who translates research to the public, but also the public in the sense of the broader academic public, the people outside our discipline, our sub-discipline, our neighborhood, who may be interested in the work. So we're also looking for ways to have our work reach more people, and that's partly the paywall, which a surprising number of academics are really unaware of because they are always just cookied in through their institutions, and they're not aware, they don't go to the library as a building anymore, they don't pay subscription fees themselves, they think the journals are just sort of there. And they don't realize all the work and budgets and everything that goes into maintaining, to giving them that information, and all that money that is then being spent to keep other people from getting it, which is a big part of what our subscription fees pay for. Point number three is to bring the process of publishing and scholarly communication back under the control of universities, of scholars in particular, and also librarians and the people who are whose business it is to provide access and to provide information to people. This is another a key way to deepen our engagement. In other words, make it be our system instead of the system of the publishers. No offense to the publishers as people. But institutionally, we or sort of kind of try to work around them. I make this pitch to sociologists in particular who are really trying to develop sort of an engagement outreach plan for their research, partly to improve their connectivity with other researchers and partly also to get out to the public and especially the media. And I've put in here sort of how to work with the peer review system and take an open scholarship approach to your career so that you're transparent and accountable, your work is reproducible, and then incorporate it with your social media and your work with the news media so that when you say to, you can say, look, I have great new research, here is an ungated version, and you should know that this paper has been peer reviewed by a fancy journal, so it's validated as good research, it's available for free, I'm sharing it on social media, would you like to talk about my research now? And sort of make it a package. But the open scholarship part of that is a key component. If you follow social scientists on Twitter, they share paywall versions of stuff all the time as if they're just, hello world, I've published this thing, and you click on it, it's $39.95. Them and the few of their friends they're interacting with don't even notice this, but it's very frustrating. Similarly, people work with their university press office, they'll do a press release that says, wow, look, I've got great new research, this person at our institution has done some exciting new research here, just described in a few paragraphs. And the paper is forthcoming, or the paper is behind a paywall. So we can fix that a lot by just intervening in between the writing and the publishing process and getting open access versions up on preprint servers and make a pitch that is part of a sort of a broader approach to engaging and opening up our scholarship. Okay, so the System Social Archive came about really just one year ago as this frustration was boiling up. Little did I know, and the people I was talking to, did we know that we were about to hit sort of a preprint moment in scholarly communication. And the Center for Open Science was already developing a preprint server at the time that we sort of got the domain name and opened the Twitter account and sort of announced that we were going to create something called Social Archive, which involved a few emails with Archive at Cornell to make sure they weren't upset with us using the name, and now everybody is using this name. BioArchive already was, but now we have EndurArchive and PsychArchive and AgriArchive, and everybody's got Kive. As Rhys said, it's free, open source, open access, and that's coming. That's the Center for Open Science way of working, and so we're very fortunate to be working with them. The Social Archive is administered by the University of Maryland, and what that means is that's where I work, and we get our the grant money and any funding that we get is administered by our university, and I'm hoping to incorporate it as kind of a function of our library down the road, which is the way Archive works at Cornell. What the Center for Open Science is providing, is bringing to this is the technology. They have a platform called the Open Science Framework. That's the platform where we share the work, and then it's through the shared database becomes the preprints become research events, which then can be fire hosed out through APIs and all kinds of technological things. So it joins the research stream. Well, we can talk a little bit more about that later. Okay, so supported by the Center for Open Science and their grants, and then some specific funding for us from the Open Society Foundation, the Sloan Foundation, and two libraries, including MIT, who I should acknowledge. I know at least somebody here is from MIT. Chris Borg at MIT is on our steering committee and is a great booster of all things open, especially having to do with sociology and social science. And the other library so far is the University of California, Los Angeles, and my own University of Maryland. We're looking for more support from libraries. If your library supports us, then I will visit your campus and talk to your faculty and librarians and try to pump up open scholarship. Okay, so what we're putting on the system and what we're encouraging people to use the system for is work at various points in the sort of research cycle. And the terminology here is not standardized. There are some people who are trying to standardize it, which is sometimes good and sometimes not good, the way that's being done. But we don't want to get too hung up on the language. They're called preprints in the generic, and the system on the Center for Open Science platform is called the preprints, OSF preprints. But we really mean things at these three stages. So working papers, which are things that are ready to share but not yet peer-reviewed. The point at which you're willing to share it with a conference, with journal of reviewers and editors, with your colleagues that you happen to know, would make the argument that you should consider sharing it more widely at that point also in that state. And that is called, in economics, those are called working papers. Sociologists sometimes call them working papers also. Some people prefer preprints. Others use the term preprint to describe something which is really ready to publish, that it has been peer-reviewed, but it just hasn't been fixed up with copy editing and pagination and so on by the journal. That's another way that people use the term preprint. That's also fine on our system. Once the paper is published or accepted by a journal, then that same thing can suddenly be called a postprint. Right, so I submit an article, the article is accepted, it's published, then that copy that I have that I'm now sharing that was a preprint yesterday could be considered a postprint today because it's already in print. It's a free copy of work that's part of the publishing stream. The way the system works that Social Archive is part of, different disciplines can have different approaches to these things, and some people have drawn lines rather rigidly between work at different stages. We're agnostic on that, and we just want to have it open up and let people put up what they want to put up. But I'm happy to talk more about those distinctions later. When you or your researcher and your institution puts up a preprint up, We have the opportunity to put the DOI for it also. So so I've written a number of papers which are uploaded as preprints. They're free and available. I say on the title page whatever the status of it is in some detail, but then I can also attach the DOI to it once it is published. So in that, so when that happens, I can share the preprint version on SocArchive. I can put it on my social media and share it with my friends and link to it and tell everybody to go read it. But while they're there, they can see that DOI, click on the DOI, and go to the version of record or the accepted version at the journal, which is often going to be paywalled. The key thing there is the licensing and permissions, and you can't just do this with anything, but we provide the link to the Sherpa Romeo database where you can look up the policies. Of course, people also should look at their own author agreements for a change and see what they actually have agreed to when they accepted, when they got their work published. Second, and you know, obviously of secondary importance to the fact that they're now going to be able to keep their jobs because they published something. What that allows is it's very easy transition between the free version and the version of record or the peer-reviewed version. When paper's uploaded, it's very easy to set up something like an RSS feed for papers that come out. So we have a Twitter account for SocArchive Papers. Every time somebody uploads a paper, or actually uploads a new version of a paper, a tweet goes out with the title and a link to the paper. Not that many people want to subscribe and read the title of every single paper published, but it's a demonstration project to show. And you could customize this so that it is research from your institution, or research from your subject area, or research from your working paper series, or whatever. So it's an easily easily adaptable kind of tool that we sort of give people as an outreach device. So it's a preprint server. It's a place. It's a website where you put your papers. Okay, it's not that complicated. The underlying technology is important, and the metadata has got to be correct, and we want it all to be done right, so that we're creating a record of scholarship that allows our work to be transparent and reproducible. But it's a key feature for us and for our users is that it's running on the platform of the Open Science Framework. That is a research and collaboration platform where people can share other files like data and code, other research materials, different versions. You link it to things like your Dropbox, your Box, your Google Drive. You have folders that are accessible just to your collaborators and some that are accessible to the public. And so it's a whole sort of collaboration platform, and the preprints just lives on a corner of it. When a piece of that work is ready, it goes out as a preprint. So in terms of a user, in terms of your faculty or people at your institutions, they can encounter our system just as a preprint server, upload a paper and walk away. But if they're looking for a more fully functioning research platform, every preprint is automatically part of that Open Science Framework. It becomes part of a project. Project has associated files, and you have all kinds of nesting opportunities and ways to share that. Every project has a persistent URL. The system generates little citations for you. You can mint DOIs. So I mentioned before, you get a DOI. You can attach DOI to the published version. You can also mint DOIs for your project on OSF. And then you can version things. So you can put new versions up, and and people can read the latest version at the same link. So that's a very nice feature. It provides tools for things like social media sharing, and you put your ORCID ID and your other kinds of IDs up there for identification purposes. So what we're trying to do is provide, and what I'm working on for this pitch is, there's an easy entry to do something that everybody wants to do, which is make their work accessible, make a free version of their work available to the public, and that it's also creating an account on a system which is going to open up a world of open scholarship for them, hopefully, and allow them to really think about how they can refashion their workflow and really their careers in a more open direction. Okay, so there's an issue in this which is more philosophical, but becomes very practical, the point at which you try to turn something, a project like this, into something like grant money, or you try to handle questions that are pressing obstacles that people have, like what about tenure, what about sort of the publishing system, what about prestige, what about junk open access publications, and so on. There is a question of how different or how disruptive you want the system to be before it becomes something that's sort of unpalatable, too radical, something that either only crazy young people or completely safe old people will even consider. So we're trying to sort of strike that balance. And the Center for Open Science is really, in my opinion, brilliant at striking that balance in the sense of providing a whole range of tools and entry points. So you can do very simple things or you can open everything up. And that's sort of what we're trying to do. This can be a step in the process of quite a traditional career, or it can be an opening into something rather different. With that in mind, I thought I would describe a little bit about where we're sort of planning to take the system, and where we go and which parts of this come first and how rapidly they develop is going to depend on the response we get, the funding we get, and that COS gets, and that the other communities get that are working on the preprint server of the system here. Among the next big thing to come will be a moderation dashboard. At the moment, you can really upload anything. There's no quality control beyond we scan it for junk. But it's quite possible that some things are getting through that are very low quality, or some things that are that people don't actually have the rights to share, or theoretically people could be stealing papers and, you know, there's no real reason to do that, but they could be. Okay. You look at the sort of the gold standard in this area is the Archive, Math and Physics Archive at Cornell, where they do a plagiarism scan of everything that comes in, and they have moderators that basically make sure that it's being categorized correctly and that it is research. So I think they take in something like 800 papers a day. They have about 100 volunteer moderators. And I imagine that each paper is getting something like 10 minutes of a person's time to run the plagiarism check the subject area, which is their starting with the areas that the researcher suggests for themselves, and then sort of make sure it goes in the right category. There's not something obviously wrong with it, like a duplicate or something like that. So at the moment, we don't have that. And there's an interesting question there. Academics are really, really used to judging the quality of work by the quality of the nearby work. So they really don't want to be on a system that has junk on it also. It's really a legacy of the old way of publishing, where you evaluate the quality of work by where it's published. We shouldn't really do that anymore if we can help it, but it's still the way the world works and a lot of people think, no offense to those people. But it's an old way of thinking. But anyway, so there's a question of how much moderation and how to do the moderation. And the different communities on this system can do it different ways, engineering and psychology and law, and there's a library science archive. So different communities can do this moderation piece differently. But one thing that allows it to do very quickly and easily is something like overlay journals, which some other paper servers have done. And by overlay journals, we mean anybody can upload a paper, and then somebody can go through those openly available papers and tag them or identify them in some way and call it a journal. This has happened successfully in the archive at Cornell, where somebody in algebraic topology looks through the algebraic topology section and picks out what they think are the 10 best papers, and they call it a journal, and they put them all on a website. It's all open access. You can do that. With the moderation capability that we're soon going to have, that'll be very easy. Right now, you can put a tag on any paper, but I can't stop you from putting a tag on. If I create a journal called Best Sociology, I can't stop you from tagging your paper Best Sociology also. But pretty soon we'll be able to do that. And so then we can set up something like something that would look like a journal. Next thing you know, you can start doing things like you can have a committee of people pick those things. You can have one person who's in charge of identifying people to pick those things, and now it really is a journal and you're doing peer review. So coming down the road is something that could be like open peer review or post-publication peer review, where the work is posted and then the review happens after that, and that review itself is a scholarly contribution. It's something that people read and engage with and discuss. We can imagine a system like an Amazon-type system where I give a rating to a paper. If you like my review, you rate my review highly, and next thing you know, you have people who are highly rated reviewers, and that becomes sort of a legitimized form of scholarly contribution also, and you can say, wow, did you read that review that Cohen wrote of that new paper? Now, that looks pretty interesting. I want to go read that. Right now, that review process is all hidden, and there's a huge amount of wasted effort. And if I submit a paper to a journal, and I wait 6 months, and three really good people spend 4 hours each on the last day of that 6 months doing it. Then there's got 12 hours of really good high quality work has gone into this. They've each written a page or two of really detailed comments, and the editor says, I'm rejecting it. Okay, fine. Not good enough for that journal. I get that information back. I can use those reviews or not, but their reviews are in the trash now. Now you send it to another journal. They're going to send it to three more reviewers who don't get the benefit of that exchange that we just had. They don't get to see those really good quality reviews or bad reviews or whatever they were. Anyway, it's a nutty system as it is now. You can imagine downsides to opening it up, but you can also imagine the vast possibilities that might also provide. So that's down the road, and that is considerably more disruptive, but it leads to other things that we might consider to be good, like replacing the legacy journals, saving billions and billions of dollars, and building an alternative scholarly communication infrastructure, which you don't have to want to do to participate in the system. Those of you who do want to do that, we really hope you will get involved in this sort of work. And encourage your faculty to do that also. I want to call your attention to a conference that we're starting this year. It's our ambition to do this regularly, and we're working on funding for that. Anybody who is in or around the DC area or can get there in the end of October, I hope you'll consider coming. We have received a good batch of papers. We'll put together some panels that are about open scholarship or are open scholarship. We have two really terrific keynote speakers lined up, Tressie McMillan-Cottom, a sociologist from Virginia Commonwealth who's written a really dynamite book about the for-profit education sector, and then Jeffrey Spies from Center for Open Science is going to come talk about the technology and related issues. And while we're there, we're going to bring people into workshop mode and spend half of the time working on our plan for taking over the world scholarly communication, like that. So I want this to seem approachable and useful to librarians, because I want you to use it both for finding work, but also to encourage the researchers and yourselves who do research to think about ways to make your research more open. If you read on our blog, Search Open, you can read sort of the chronology of the developments that we've had and the latest things. I should point out that if the work that's on here does show up in Google Scholar and so on, so it's not like you have to, I'm not giving you homework to now always check here to see if there's a version. Those things will show up in the places that you already search, I want it to seem like a viable and efficient and easily attainable avenue for you and the scholars that you work with to get their work out there. So I'd like to take your questions now. Thank you very much.